VT moves to VTForeignPolicy.com. There's mass protests in Israel, and Dr. Kevin Barrett's coming on right here, right now, on
VT Radio. Let's go. With host Johnny Punish.
And we are back on VT Radio with Dr. Kevin Barrett, senior editor of VT. Now, folks, before we get started, I want to say that VT has made a huge move over to VT Foreign Policy. Over the last 5 years, we've rebranded because our international writers come from all over the world now. So to reflect our direction, we've moved to VTForeignPolicy.com. Obviously, if you go to the old veterans today, it'll go right to VTForeignPolicy.com. So just make sure you bookmark it once you're there so you can follow us on VT. Also, I want to say a huge, huge shout out to the new VT members who have joined and been very generous to join us with $8 a month. Francesca Duarte, I want to say thank you to you. Bill Cowell, you said you've been following VT for 10 years. It keeps you informed. Been reading your stuff for many years. It's about time I chipped in. Right on, Bill. Thanks a lot, man. And John, who just says, love VT. And Melody Poor, she says, I just unsubscribed to WAPO because my comment to an article was banned. Thus, I'm grateful to become a VT member due to the free speech platform VT provides. She says, thanks. You're welcome, Melody. It's our pleasure. And Faith Harmony, Robert Mitchell, Harold E. Call, I really like VT, he says, the information provided. I wish you would lighten up on President Trump. We all saw that he did for America. He's not perfect. I didn't like his manner, but the more I see the current administration, the more I like Trump. But I'm going to donate to VT anyway. So I want to say thank you to Harold and make a real quick comment about that. Harold, you know, we on VT have different opinions, and that's the beauty of open, uncensored media. There are VT writers that are more pro-Trump, and there are some VT writers that are not so pro-Trump. So I just want to let you know that we're working really hard, and let's agree to disagree sometimes, and that's okay. That's part of being in a democracy and being part of free speech and that kind of thing. So I also want to say thanks to Hans G. Merton. He says, God bless your independence. Very well taken, Hans. Thank you so much. And you can join VT by going to buymeacoffee.com/VTmedia. So go ahead and go there when you have a chance and help us out and join our media, our membership. Okay. Another thing I want to say, Kevin, there's another guy. Oh, by the way, fans out there, my song Dollface drops on Spotify today. So if you use Spotify, go there and take a listen to my song. It's called Dollface. Look up Johnny Punish on Spotify. Like and share that. Okay. Now, special announcement for Dr. Kevin Barrett. You know, Dr. Kevin Barrett's been working very, very hard over the last 10 years, bringing you tremendous information, outstanding intellectual, outstanding, just fabulous stuff for people to read and people to like. He's moving to Morocco, and he's doing a fundraiser. So for everybody out there, I want you to make sure that you support Dr. Kevin Barrett on his move to Morocco. Dr. Kevin Barrett, can you go ahead and give us the link so we can support you on that move?
Yeah, it's kevinbarrett.substack.com, and you could just stop there and scroll down, but you could also do the full URL, kevinbarrett.substack.com/p/Ramadan-fundraiser-help-us-relocate. And the full name is Help Us Relocate and Become Sustainable, because, you know, I'm just really not financially sustainable here in the U.S., and, you know, I'm getting close to Social Security age, and I can't live on my $800 a month Social Security very long anywhere around here. And in Morocco, I could probably survive on a vastly lower income, so I could kind of keep doing what I'm doing without the financial problems. So, and there's also, I mean, there's a number of reasons for doing this. We have a great project over there to work with our nonprofit to try and bring influencers to Morocco so they can see the local culture and hopefully open up their minds a little bit about things like Muslims and Morocco and Africa and things like that. And I am, you know, really looking forward to being out of the U.S. because, you know, frankly, things are, you know, I just need some perspective. I need some distance right now because I like you were talking about the pro-Trump, anti-Trump. I don't really identify with either at this point. It looks like this country is really totally polarized, and I don't really particularly identify with either side. I guess I like the pro-Trump populist side a little better than the other establishment side, but not enough to really want to join it and rush the barricades, you know what I'm saying? So I need a little distance so I can keep doing the work I do, you know, critically talking about what's going on and do it, you know, without being either, you know, kind of totally depressed and alienated.
Right. You know, everybody listening out there, please, you know, Dr. Barrett is an amazing gentleman. And if you do have extra funds and the wherewithal to do that, please reach out and help Dr. Kevin Barrett to get this done because it's really important. He's a voice on the internet that's rare. We got a lot of corporate media out there spewing out propaganda, and Dr. Kevin Barrett never participates in that. And that's a valuable commodity for all of us in the truth area. So I want to say, please, you'll see the link on the screen here. Our editor, Lindsay, is going to put it up there. And so make sure you click on that and let's get that done. Dr. Kevin Barrett, I want to talk about some really important things today. Obviously, there's mass protests in Israel going on right now. You know, I was in a band called Twisted Nixon back in the 90s. And one of the songs I wrote was for the Intifada called Stone Throw and Riot. You can actually listen to it on YouTube or Spotify or whatever. It's called Stone Throw and Riot. But the Israelis now are having an Israeli Stone Throw and Riot. You know, they're going out there protesting Netanyahu. Here's what's happening. Parts of it, right now, there's a huge walkout protest the workers. There's a worker strike happening right now. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of people in the streets. Basically, what they're protesting is the government wants to have control over the appointment of judges, and their parliament would gain power to override Supreme Court decisions. The opponents say that this plan threatens the foundations of Israeli democracy, and people are just pissed. Basically, they want to control everything, the political people. So what say you about what's going on over there in Israel right now?
Well, some people see it as a Netanyahu power grab because, of course, Netanyahu has had his run-ins with the judiciary over there over corruption charges. And so if he controls the judges, then that won't be a problem for him anymore. So I think that's part of it. But also, there's, you know, this consolidation of power around Netanyahu and his extremist coalition is probably designed partly to sort of, you know, keep that movement going towards a more and more openly genocidal kind of Israeli government. In the past, they've always been able to hide it much better behind the facade of supposedly being a Western-style liberal democracy with divisions of power and so on. That doesn't stop them from exiling and killing Palestinians, but they're able to do it and get away with it because of that facade. So really from a pro-Palestinian perspective, what it looks like here is Israel is kind of self-destructing because due to demographics, the kind of folks who tend to be more extremist and maybe not quite as, cultured and educated are having a lot more children. And the relatively less extremist, more cultured and educated folks aren't having any children. And so what happens over time is that you get these bigger and bigger majorities for the extremist parties. And so Israel is kind of going ultra extremist, which is going to completely torpedo its relationship with Western Jews, the Jews in Europe and the U.S., who tend to be more liberal. And the only reason they can stomach Israel is because of that facade of, you know, fake liberal democracy, which is now being ripped down and burned. So all of this ultimately is probably pretty good news for the Palestinians, but it's going to be a nasty kind of transition from where we are now to whatever comes next.
Yeah, it's an incredible turn of events over there. Did not see that coming. But when Netanyahu was reelected for the 90th time, I think he's been there for like 1,000 years, right? I mean, I remember writing about that guy in 1990s. How long are you going to make this guy in charge? But he got in there and made a coalition with the extreme right. And this is what we're getting is we want him. He's trying to protect himself against, going to jail for his corruption. And of course, he aligned himself with the extremists, and that makes it worse for everybody. I mean, you know, we would say pro-Palestinian. My mom's a Palestinian, as everybody knows, but I'm not just pro-Palestinian. I'm pro-human being. And I think that's even more important, right? So, pro-people, pro-democracy, pro-freedom, pro-truth, whether you're a Palestinian in the West Bank, living as a second-class citizen occupied by Israeli people, or even a second class citizen living in Haifa as an Israeli citizen, but still second class. You know, it sucks all the way around. Israel's going to have to change. And I contend that the only future for Israel is to become a full democratic country where everybody has rights, including their Palestinian citizens, their Jewish citizens, their Christian citizens, their Muslim citizens, their pagan citizens. That kind of Israel I would support if that was true. But I don't care what you call it. You can call it, I'll name the country Nelson Mandela, for God's sakes. You know, I don't care what you call it. But because it's about people, it's about kids, it's about families, it's about people that want their kids in schools and people that want a good life, a fair job. That's all it's about, really. But all these people on top are just nasty, evil people fighting for power to stay in power. Netanyahu, just go home. Dude, retire, man. You know, what's up with that? You know, what say you, Kevin?
No, I agree completely. And let's not forget that Netanyahu is a leading suspect in the 9/11 atrocities, which were designed to hijack America's military power and use it to demolish the countries that were posing a threat to Israel. So, you know, and yeah, we have his tape from Fink's Bar where he talked about how we're going to just totally, you know, destroy and crush the United States because we can. You know, he's not a very nice character. And from, you know, the patriotic American perspective, you know, he really should be public enemy number one, you know, not Putin. I mean, Netanyahu is the guy who was almost certainly his forces, if not himself personally, but there's strong evidence he personally was involved in blowing up the World Trade Center on 9/11. So this is not somebody that Americans should be tolerating. And it's really disgraceful the way our Congress gave him this horrible, obsequious standing ovation when he came and was, you know, speaking against the Obama administration, which was just pretty milquetoast, but, you know, couldn't stand Netanyahu and probably knew full well what he did on 9/11. And so he goes to Congress and the whole Congress like feels obliged to jump up and give him a standing ovation every 20 seconds. This is the guy who blew up the Trade Center, and our Congress was kissing his butt. It's really an outrage. I mean, I'm not a huge supporter of the so-called insurrection in 2020, but frankly, when you see those guys jumping up and giving standing ovations to the man who blew up the World Trade Center, probably, you know, burning down the Congress doesn't sound like such a bad idea. I mean, I'm being facetious, of course, but only, you know, half so, because it's really disgusting the way the U.S. has been corrupted by Zionist power, especially by the worst crooks out of Israel, like Netanyahu.
Well, I think VT foreign policy has been addressing this issue for years. And, you know, it's actually, I've noticed there's a slight change in American attitudes towards Israel. You know, 30 years ago, it was hook, line, and sinker, you know, pro-Israel, out the door, no one questioned it. Nobody questioned it, like nobody, okay? But now a lot of people on the right are questioning Israel. People on the left are not. They're part of the Democratic Party. They're just all in with Israel, as far as I can tell.
No, I don't think that's true, John. Actually, the kind of left side of the Democratic Party is definitely questioning Israel. I mean, Bernie Sanders has been for a long time. There's the Squad, of course. So there's a threat to Israel from the liberal side too, the left side.
I guess I meant the moderate Democratic side.
Yeah, the mainstream Democrats are bought and paid for, but then so are the mainstream Republicans.
Right, fair enough. Yeah, absolutely. But I did notice there are people out there going, "Hey," and I think we're part of that. I think VT foreign policy is part of the awakening to what is important to America, and why are we supporting a country of just 6 million people? It's ridiculous, you know? I mean, it's not even the size of Los Angeles. I mean, Los Angeles is 15 million people, you know? And this little country gets so much oxygen in the United States, it's incredible, right? And it's not a question of being anti-Israel, so everybody who's going to make me anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, whatever you want to call me, it's nonsense, okay? Nonsense. It's about what's important for the United States of America. You know, Mexico is the number one trading partner, Canada number two, China's number three. These are important economic issues for everyday Americans. What the hell does Israel have to do with all this? You know what I mean? Nothing. Nothing. Speak to that.
Yeah, we're tired of hearing about it. So
yes, we are tired of hearing about it. It's disgusting. We want to have a country in the United States that's pro-United States people. That's all. Not anti-anything. Just investing, instead of giving billions to Israel, investing in the streets, investing in schools, investing in American children. It's not that you're anti anything. It just means you're pro your own company, you know, your own people. That's all it is. That's how I see it anyway.
Yeah, so, no, I agree.
And maybe that's why you're getting frustrated with America. You know, you're going to be
moving. It's one of the things. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's But it's also, you know, I kind of feel like I've spent my entire adult life. In fact, even before I was an adult, I woke up to the JFK assassination and tried to wake other people up about that. So it kind of feels like, in the, you know, then in 2006, I became the whipping boy for Scholars for 9/11 Truth and got driven out of the academy. And so I've been, you know, doing my thing, trying to wake people up more intensively, sort of as my job since then. And after, you know, a whole lifetime of, you know, trying to wake up these sheeple, at, you know, at this point, it feels like, kind of, you know, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over. And, I'm really ready to get some distance from it and, you know, be able to sort of look at the United States and these huge problems from a perspective of sort of the way I look at problems in other places now, you know, because growing up here and having lived my whole life here, I take it real personally. Yeah, you know, I took it personally when I learned that Kennedy was blown away by these evil people in a coup d'etat and that nobody was doing anything about it. And I took it personally when these Zionists and neocons blew up the Trade Center and blamed the Muslims and launched a genocidal permanent war on Islam for Israel and just blew up the Constitution and, you know, basically terminated the Bill of Rights with extreme prejudice. Yeah, so I kind of took all that stuff personally because, hey, this is my country and here I am. Well, it's still, I mean, in a sense, it's still going to be my country wherever I live, but I'm really ready to, you know, look at it from across the ocean for a while.
Absolutely. You know, when we see the forest from the trees, we get a great perspective. So it's kind of like going to space and looking down at planet Earth and realizing we're all human beings as opposed to just this or that. You know, you get to see a bigger world, you know, and I support it. I look forward to seeing you in Morocco. I'm going to come visit you. Like I told you last time,
yeah,
I'm coming over. Yeah. So you better reserve a seat at the table. I'm going to have some good ahwe, some Arabic coffee with you and maybe some, you know, batlawa.
Kahwa in
kahwa,
Morocco.
Kahwa in Morocco. Yeah. Kahwa. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Ahwe in Palestinian or Lebanese vernacular, but there you go. Okay, next question for you. There's a listener named Jason Gamble for VT. He's asking me a question I don't really know the answer to. Maybe you do. I don't know. He's asking, speak about the link between Ashkenazi Jews starting Freemasonry in England in 1717 in order to subvert Christianity, their association with the Italian Carbonari, and the Alta Vendetta written by a Russian Jew. Do you know anything about that? I personally don't. Have you heard that
before? The Alta Vendetta, I don't recall knowing much about that. And in terms of the Freemasonry as a Jewish plot to undermine Christianity, yeah, I think that probably is one of the aspects of Freemasonry, and maybe even the most important one. I don't know for sure. Certainly, we notice that Freemasonry has been dedicated to undermining sort of institutional Christianity in the West. That's basically what it does. And the way it appealed to people back in the day was by saying, oh, the church is censoring you and, you know, brutally persecuting you for heresy and things like that. And we're all free thinkers and, you know, come join the free thinkers. We're the most interesting people in town. And that appeal, of course, I mean, there's a reason why that was appealing to people. So the question then is, was this really all some big scam to rope the ex-Christians in with the Jews to destroy Christian power? And, well, it kind of did play out that way to some extent. And the Freemasonic fixation on rebuilding Solomon's temple obviously is part of a kind of really anti-Christian Jewish messianic millenarianism. You know, the Jewish millenarian position has always been traditionally, at least, that the Jewish Messiah, who is not Jesus, they despise Jesus, they view son of a whatever, they believe the real Messiah will be a Jewish conqueror who will subjugate the other tribes, that is the Goyim, to the Jews and establish a world capital in Israel. And that's tied in with this desire to tear down the Masjid al-Aqsa, which is the Islamic world's oldest and greatest architectural monument, and put up a blood sacrifice temple. And that would be where their Messiah would rule the world. And so this obsession with rebuilding the temple is common to both Jewish messianic millenarianism and Freemasonry. And Freemasonry, of course, puts, you know, Solomon is up at the top of their heroes. So there are also a lot of indications that Freemasonry is basically into satanic black magic. That is, it's into trafficking with the spirits allied to the Shaitan, Audhu Billah, And that, again, is anti-institutional traditional religion and maybe pro Antichrist. Because let's face it, this Messiah that they would have ruling the world from Jerusalem after they destroy the Masjid al-Aqsa, this Messiah who despises Jesus, right, who's the real Messiah, Jesus they believe is the fake Messiah. So that guy, that Messiah, their Messiah, Messiah of these radical Jews and Freemasons would, of course, be the Antichrist for Christians and Muslims. So, yeah, I think there's something to that analysis, but I haven't heard about all the details that the commenter supplied. I'd be interested in learning more.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I have another intellectual question for you. You know, my wife took her DNA test recently, and it came back 1% Jewish. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. She's 1% religion? Okay, and then people are always talking about, you know, he's a Russian Jew, or he's an American Jew. He's a whatever Jew. Question for you. How come we don't refer to other people as he's a Russian Muslim or a Russian Catholic or he's an American Catholic or American, you know, Christian? I mean, generally we speak in these terms of referring to these people as he's always a Jew. I question that because as far as I'm aware of, Judaism is a religion. It's not a DNA thing. It's a spiritual construct. Why is Ancestry.com or what's it called, DNA 123 or whatever that thing is called? Why are they telling people they're part Jewish? Do you know anything about that?
Well, you know, there are probably two reasons, you know, one ideological and one actual scientific. The ideological reason is that Jews have very much convinced themselves and other people that they are a race as well as a religion. And they kind of go back and forth between race or tribe on the one hand and religion on the other, depending on which is more profitable to deploy at a particular time or situation. So there's that ideology that, you know, Jews are this people that are, you know, racial, right? But then there is a certain amount of scientific truth to that, more so than with Christians and Muslims. Now, of course, all Christians, Muslims, and Jews do include people of wide varieties of DNA, of course. There are, you know, Black African Jews, Christians, and Muslims, and there are Nordic white Christians, Jews, and Muslims. However, with the Christians and the Muslims, there's a huge variety, especially with Muslims, traditionally. Now, Christianity tended to be a little bit more geographically limited than Islam for a long part of its history. But with Judaism, there is, well, the reason, you know, there has been a sort of a somewhat idea, a Jewish genome that's a little bit more coherent than the Christian and Muslim ones is probably that, well, number one, it's a smaller group of people and it didn't proselytize to huge numbers as much as its sister Abrahamic monotheisms did. But then also there's a really strong impetus for endogamy in Judaism, meaning keeping it within the tribe. Like the, you know, Jews wanted to, you know, there was a strong belief that they should marry among themselves. Like you don't want your son or daughter marrying a non-Jew, marrying a despised goy. So they did marry within themselves to a great extent. And so I think that genetically, there are more sort of Jewish markers, identifiable Jewish markers than from these other faiths. I think those are really the two reasons.
But you know, what's interesting about that is that an American person who's of the Jewish faith, he's generally Russian. If you look at their history, they come from the Russian Empire, or definitely they come from Europe, right? And we know that the European Jewish people are basically European citizens. They're not really from the ancient Hebrew tribes. To be frankly honest, it's scientific fact that I'm definitely more part of the Hebrew tribe than they are, being a Palestinian from Haifa, Palestine, right? So my DNA is 75% Middle Eastern, and it's more likely that I am definitely from the ancient Hebrew tribes, and they're definitely not. As we know, we cover it on VT all the time, where do the European Jewish people come from? DNA says they came through Italy, they come from the Khazarian regions. They were probably peoples that switched religions due to war. That happens a lot in history. We saw that happen in the Spanish Inquisition when the Spanish took over. They either told people, you either, you know, convert to Christianity or get the hell out of here, or you get the axe, right? You become, you're out of here. So you know, changing religions sometimes is a necessary for survival, or sometimes military issues, you know. So I just don't see I don't see Judaism in 2023 as anything to do with DNA. Judaism is about 40 million people around the world, which is not a lot. There's 8 billion of us, right?
I'm sorry, 40 million? I don't think so. I think it's closer to like 15 million, I think.
15 million people around the world?
I think so,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so whatever it is, it's a minuscule percentage of the global population. We're talking 8 billion people. It's nothing, right? It's like almost nobody, right? But yet we're constantly talking about this, and we're constantly being bombarded with, you know, this person is a Jewish race. It's, you know, if I can convert to Judaism, it's not a race. I mean, that's how I see it, you know?
Right. But see, if you convert to Judaism, you take your DNA test and they'll say, okay, here's what your ancestors are. And they won't say, quote unquote, Jewish, because the people that are going to come up, quote unquote, Jewish, these are going to be the people that would be either Ashkenazi or Sephardim. And so those Ashkenazi Jews have been intermarrying with each other since, for many, many centuries. And so essentially a small group of sort of Turkic people with some admixture from the Middle East. There appears to be a male admixture. It appears that's a group of men who immigrated from the Middle East to Khazaria or this, you know, kind of Eastern European area, intermarried with local women. And that was kind of the beginning of what became the Sephardic Jewish, quote unquote, DNA. But that group then just intermarried within themselves mostly for many centuries. And so they come up with a certain thing on the DNA test, and you wouldn't. But likewise, there'd be other Jewish people. Like, I know these people who converted to Judaism, and then there are the Africans, and there'll be various Jews who won't come up as Jewish on their DNA. But of course, the reason that they do this, which of course you disagree with for good reasons, is not just that they can, not just that they can say, yeah, here's all these people who think they're Jewish. Majority of Americans who think they're Ashkenazi Jewish actually come up as Ashkenazi in their DNA test, but also because the Jews have made this thing of being a tribe. And, you know, the you're eligible to go to Israel and make Aliyah if your mother was Jewish. So that, and why is that? Well, because they really put a premium on that, you know, inherited DNA ancestry, right? And that's why it was the mother, not the father's line, because nobody's ever 100% sure who their father is, but everybody is always 100% sure who their mother was. So that's why it's the Jewish mother thing is so important for tracing your ancestry. So that's the way they think about it. And I agree they shouldn't, but they do.
Right. And that's kind of where we are in the world today, right? So, but I think it's changing. I think Americans are becoming more awake to this issue. They're paying more attention to it. And I think that's a good thing for the future. You know, Kevin, I want to switch to this thing called the October Surprise. Can you explain the October Surprise to our listeners and to me myself?
Yeah. So in 1980, Reagan and Bush were running this campaign backed by a bunch of CIA hooligans who were unhappy that the Democrats, mostly in the 1970s with the Church Committee and so on, had been digging into the CIA's secrets, the family jewels, which included a bunch of really horrific things, not least of which was the murder of John F. Kennedy. But the Church Committee didn't really get into that. They did have another assassinations committee, though, that did and got pretty close to breaking the case. So there was, you know, these CIA hooligans were starting to panic. And they coalesced around the Reagan campaign and decided they were going to put Reagan in office and make Jimmy Carter a one-term president. And so the way they did that was that this hostage crisis erupted when the Iranian students took the American embassy people hostage in Tehran and held them throughout 1980. And pretty much the whole year of 1980 was like you watch the news, and the news would always begin with, this is day number 3, this is day number 20, this is day number 40, this is day number 60, this is day number 8, this is day number 120, this is, you know, and on and on, of the hostages' captivity under these cruel Iranians.
Wasn't that Koppel on ABC? He was doing that every single night, Nightline.
They all were. The media was just blanket coveraging them. So basically, it became clear that if Carter could get the hostages released, he was going to get reelected. And if he didn't, he wouldn't. And he ended up desperately trying this military mission to save them, which then went down into the desert supposedly due to a freak sandstorm. I think it might have been also a freak sandstorm whipped up by the CIA hooligans. But in any case, the CIA hooligans were dedicated to making sure that those hostages didn't get released, which was going to absolutely ensure Carter's defeat in the election, and it was going to put Reagan and Bush in office. Bush, of course, is a CIA hooligan from way back, participated in killing Kennedy, and on and on. So it was a coup d'etat, basically. And what they did was they cut a deal with the Iranian government to keep the hostages locked up until Reagan was in office. And the Iranians kept their side of the bargain almost too punctually. They released the hostages just minutes after Reagan took his oath of office. Now, this, then,
you know what? I remember that as a kid. I remember even as a kid, I was, I don't remember how old I was, maybe 13 or something. Even as a kid, I saw that going, God, that's really weird. You know, it's like he gets inaugurated, they get released. It was weird. Yeah. Remember that? That was incredible, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was on that really quickly. I mean, it wasn't even subtle. I mean, even before Reagan and Bush became the nominees, Bush had already put together this team of CIA hooligans, you know, Kennedy assassins and drug smugglers and torturers and MKUltra mind control people and Project Monarch people and stuff. All those people had coalesced around Bush. And I was actually following this at the time. So even before Reagan Bush got the nomination, I could see that this evil wing of our CIA was going to try to take the election for Bush. Bush, I think, ran, but he was not a very good candidate. He ended up the vice presidential candidate. And interestingly, of course, he would then try to kill Reagan and get himself into office within just a few months of Reagan's inauguration. So I saw all this stuff happening, and it wasn't even very subtle, most of it. Like Hinckley, the guy who supposedly shot Reagan, dined with Bush's, was it his brother or something, the night before the shooting. So it's they weren't even subtle. It maybe wasn't the night before, but close enough. Anyway, so I saw all this stuff back in the day. But then, and then diligent journalists, people like Barbara Honegger and later Columbia history professor, National Security Council guy Gary Sick, wrote books about this, proving it 7 ways from Sunday. So this has always been one of those so-called conspiracy theories that everybody that did their homework knew was true. And yet the establishment poo-pooed it and lumped it with aliens and, you know, Elvis is alive and well living with Hitler in Montenegro and this sort of thing. And so it's, you know, it's just one of these many, many disturbing historical truths that I've been working on trying to expose over the decades. And now, just last week, the New York Times basically admitted it was true because one of the conspirators, actually, he may have been innocent, but he was kind of on the team of John Connolly, who was one of the conspirators, just confessed because Jimmy Carter is in hospice and this guy wanted to get it off his chest. So anyway, another conspiracy theory turns out to be true and is now admitted by the New York Times to basically be true. I just had Barbara Honegger on my show talking about this Friday night. And of course, people can find that show at my Substack, kevinbarrett.substack.com.
Perfect. Yeah. That's an incredible turn of events. It's almost like a Deep Throat confessing he was Deep Throat. You know, that was a few years back.
Yeah. Or,
out of the woodworks.
40 years from now, maybe somebody will admit that they planted the explosives that blew up the Trade Center.
Yeah.
And everybody will say, oh, well, that's that. Okay. Ancient history.
Let's move on. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Before I let you go today, I want to talk about one more thing. About truth in media. You know, we've switched over to VT Foreign Policy. It's a new day in our media. I see it as, you know, we see the world from all sides. All opinions are welcome. All perspectives are welcome. I personally don't claim to know the truth about anything exclusively. So can you talk about the mainstream media and what it does and what VT is doing to bring balance to that, some sort of levity to that? Can you explain that to our readers and listeners, how that works?
Well, I'm trying to bring levity to VT with my satirical columns occasionally, but in terms of trying to bring balance, yeah, I think that I appreciate VT's dedication to two things. One is free speech, and then the other is multiple perspectives. And this is really what's missing from not only the mainstream, but a lot of the alternative media, because with the rise of the internet, people started really living into bubbles. They started diving into these bubbles where everybody thinks the same way they do and pushes their emotional buttons, and they only get sort of one-sided information. And to the extent they look at the other side, they just are looking at it purely to deride and make fun of it. Now, I kind of understand that, because a lot of the stuff out there is so bad that what else can you do but sort of make fun of it? But on the other hand, there are lots of different legitimate perspectives and thoughtful arguments being made from a wide variety of positions. And I think it's really important to first not suppress people because you disagree with them. And then secondly, to look at the broadest range of, you know, reasonably defensible perspectives on all issues. And of course, that's what's led me to the positions I take today. So some would say it's dangerous to do what I'm advising people to do, because if you're open-minded and curious and you look at these different possibilities and arguments coming from all sides, including the ones that are being marginalized and insulted by the mainstream, you quickly learn that the world doesn't work the way the mainstream tells you it does. And I really appreciate how VT is dedicated to that, that we have people from different ideological perspectives, different interpretations in all these different countries and stuff, putting stuff out that mostly is critiquing one aspect or another of mainstream media, which is now really just a big Orwellian propaganda service. It's like TASS and Pravda was under the Soviet Union, only possibly worse because people don't even realize it.
Right. Incredible. You know, thank you for saying that. You know, VT has been dedicated to that for 18 years. And as we move forward, we're going to stay with that. But that also means we don't get corporate support, and nor do we want it. We don't want the corporations to tell us what to do. It's fully independent. So before I let you go, I want all the listeners to reach out and buy VT a cup of coffee. Make sure you go to our website and click on that. You can donate a one-time donation to help us and buy us a cup of coffee. Donate $5, donate $10, whatever you could afford. Please only what you could afford. And don't forget to please support Dr. Kevin Barrett on his move to Morocco. It's a new day for Dr. Kevin Barrett, and he needs some financial assistance there. So please reach out. Lindsay, make sure you get that link on the screen there for all the people that are watching by video. And Dr. Barrett, before I let you go, tell us what you're going to be working on this week, and tell us how best to contact you and reach you.
Well, I'm not quite sure what I'm working on this week, because I was originally going to write about the October surprise and what it tells us about American elections being less than trustworthy, which of course can get you deplatformed from YouTube and such. But it turns out that somebody jumped on that topic ahead of me for American Free Press, so I have to quickly come up with a new topic. I did write about the Russia-China alliance for Crescent magazine, and that article will be out shortly. I'll put it on my Substack soon, and then a couple days later, it'll be out in the magazine.
Okay, perfect. And how best to reach you for, let's say, just generally people reaching you?
Well, I guess the first thing is to subscribe to my Substack at kevinbarrett.substack.com, and then you can actually reach me through that, or you could email me at truthjihad@gmail.com.
Perfect. On that note, Kevin, I want to wish you a fantastic week coming up here. It looks like a lot of action's coming our way this week, so let's see what happens, and we'll react to it next Monday. Thank you very much for being on VT Radio.
Sounds good, Jenny.
If you enjoyed this presentation, hit the like button now. Also, share it with your friends. And don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode.
VT approves this message.